morning. This is Sean from the SoulForge podcast. Be a better human, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for December 11th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hasselfly.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week, Chip. It's that week. We still have school for another week and a half.
Isn't this exam week?
Exam week is right around the corner. It might not be this week. It might be next week.
Okay.
But this is the week when we have all the office parties. All of the Christmas celebrations are in full force this week.
Excellent choice. Have some fun.
Have some fun.
And use that Uber or Lyft ticket that you need. I think you've got coupons for us, right, Steve?
Sure, of course we do. Go to our show notes. You can find all sorts of discounts on everything. I'll have the Lyft pick you up when you need it, and you can go to our show notes and click on that link and get a free Lift.
That works real
on
well.
Merry
if,
Christmas.
If you've never used it, my daughter uses it all the time.
And yeah.
I use Uber and Lyft when I go downtown also. It's just a lot easier for
so easy.
$5-6 you can get around wherever you need to go. They'll come pick you up and drop you off.
This episode sponsored by Lyft.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. I got a chance to see a documentary this week on Netflix. This is called They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. It came out in November, and it is the documentary of Orson Welles' final 15 years, where he was kind of a strange person at that point.
Well, Steve, when he wasn't selling frozen peas and selling Parmesan wine, uh-huh. What was he doing?
He was creating art. He was making a movie. This movie that he was trying to make was called The Other Side of the Wind. This film was never finished. He ran into all sorts of problems making this film, and for 6 or 7 years he was filming pieces of this movie. That's the focus of this documentary, is this idea of who this man was through the lens of making this movie.
Now, let's go ahead and start with a couple of things for our young whippersnappers out there, Steve,
mm-hmm.
who may not know who Orson Welles is. He's the Pinky or the Brain?
He's the Brain. Those of you who watch Pinky and the Brain, the voice of the Brain is certainly an Orson Welles impression. Orson Welles had a very distinctive voice and a very distinctive way of making movies. The best movie of all time, if you ask just about anybody, they might say Citizen Kane is the best movie of all time. That's Orson Welles.
And that was his first film.
That was his first film. And he really suffered as a result of being that guy who made that movie first. He never really got to be the guy who made a second film that was of any caliber of that original. Trying to live up to that, it was very difficult.
And part of that was because he had such success early,
mm-hmm.
he felt every time he went out, he had to improve upon basically the best film of all time,
right.
is what many people would say.
It's very difficult.
And, you know, this is part of, you know, a lot of artists run into that. Michael Jackson had that difficulty after Thriller came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was the difference between Michael Jackson and Orson Welles is that he seemed to Jackson continued to put out material.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that Orson Welles really, the weight of this inhibited him from even completing the work.
Yeah, he did put out several movies between his first and his last,
mm-hmm.
but they're all pretty forgettable. They're not movies that we think of, and when we think of Orson Welles, we think of two things. We think of Citizen Kane, and we think of the War of the Worlds radio presentation, where he scared America into thinking that the world was being attacked by aliens.
Okay. So there are many listeners that insist on everything being anchored somewhere in the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably say that Orson Welles, He was
from this area, sir. He was born in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is right across the border, and he lived in the Chicagoland area for a big part of his childhood. He had a very, very sad childhood. His mother died before he was 10. His father was a very abusive alcoholic who was absentee father of the year in that time. And he wound up in Woodstock, Illinois at age 10. And he felt that that was home for him.
So, you know, Woodstock is a beautiful little town mm-hmm. outside of Chicago area, known for, of course, Dick Tracy's, the gentleman who wrote that, Chester Gould, he moved from Chicago out there.
Right.
And also Groundhog's Day, right?
Yeah, Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, the movie, was filmed in Woodstock so that it looked like Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. But yeah, Orson Welles grew up there, and when asked in the 1960s, where is home, Orson Welles replied, "I suppose it's Woodstock, Illinois, if it's anywhere. I went to school there for 4 years, and when I think of home, I think of Woodstock." He had a very tumultuous childhood. He never really found roots anywhere. To say that he lived in one place for 4 years and that's what he thinks of as home, that's sad, really.
Well, he's not alone in that. Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't have a bad childhood, but I lived in many different communities mm-hmm. when I growing up. I claimed Fayetteville as my hometown, but I could easily claim Raleigh. I could claim Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose where I graduated from high school as my mm-hmm. hometown, and that was just that I had to choose something, and that's how I chose.
Interesting.
And anyway, I had a great time there. For Woodstock, they did name the stage at the Opera House.
That's right.
After Orson Welles.
In 2013, they named it the Orson Welles Stage at the Woodstock Opera House because that is where he had his directorial stage debut, was right there in Woodstock, Illinois.
So we probably have to raise a toast to Parmesan champagne, sparkling white wine for that. If you haven't seen the commercial, you should.
If you haven't seen the outtakes, we spent some time watching the outtakes on YouTube. We'll put that in the show notes as well, but yeah.
Oh.
Orson was not quite interested in making that commercial.
French champagne is...
it's really
Paul
funny.
Paul and son is put together. Oh.
Orson Welles was an artistic director. He wanted to make movies that were beautiful pieces of art, and that's where he really got stuck sometimes. This final film, The Other Side of the Wind, was never technically finished because he was looking for something artistic to come out of the mechanism of making a movie.
Now, through this movie, you were able to learn that it was confiscated at some point.
That's right. In the time, the Nation of Iran, who was funding this filmmaking, they had a political problem, and they confiscated this film and would not let Orson Welles have it.
That's the 1970s, Katz.
Uh-huh.
So we would consider that the modern era? No, that's old, long time ago.
It's a long time ago. It's a generation behind. But yeah, some of the frustration is he was trying to make this artistic piece. He felt that there was going to be some magical moment that he could capture on camera that maybe wasn't in the script, maybe wasn't even a part of the conversation, but it would be that magical moment. That genie in a bottle that he captured in Citizen Kane, he was always seeking that again. Having the money from Iran, and then having that money run out and having the film confiscated and taken away from him was very frustrating in this documentary.
In many ways, it sounds like the Iranians, mm-hmm. Investors, were very similar to what the Chinese investors are doing right now mm-hmm. for Hollywood. They have all this American dollars, uh-huh. these dollars, and they're like, we'll make movies.
Let's make some big explosion movies. Let's make the Transformers Part 17 and...
exactly.
Yeah, and hope for the best.
The Rock's starring in this one. It's yeah. called Baywatch 2.
Baywatch. The Baywatch movie is a great example of that. Yeah, this movie didn't see the light of day until this November when Netflix got a hold of it and they did release this movie, The Other Side of the Wind. And it's not good.
It isn't.
No.
It's amazing that, you know, he's filmed it over this long period of time. How in the world did he keep these actors? Because that's pretty amazing, too.
He had a bevy of people walk out on him. There were stories. There's actually, in the movie, the one actor leaves the set because he's tired of this. And he Orson Welles made that a part of the movie. Because this is a movie about a frustrated director making a movie that he can't make the movie because of all the frustrations that the director has. It's very meta.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, So they're all on Netflix.
Yes, this is now on Netflix as of November. These are both out there for you to watch, for you to get a little bit of an idea of who Orson Welles was.
The Netflix elves have always been good to us, mm-hmm. Steve. We'll learn. Keep that in mind. We'll keep going. Steve, anything fun going out this weekend?
There are some new movies opening this week. Peter Jackson is one of those directors that we think of when we think of making great movies. He is opening a new film called Mortal Engines. He didn't direct this one. He just put up the money. He's just producing this one. But this one looks very interesting.
Steve, this looks like Mad Max meets Waterworld.
Waterworld meets...
I don't know, like a Godzilla movie.
Like a Doctor Who episode where the city of London is riding on the back of a star whale. Yeah, that's what this looks like. This trailer looks like a mess to me. I don't know that there's a great story in this story, but it is based on a book from 2001, so there might be a great story there.
There may be a great story. The idea is that London is now like a vehicle.
Yes.
Like a city is a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And if you think about where London is located, it's on an island. Mm-hmm. And if I was going to make something that's a city, I'd probably pick some place there's like a continent.
Well, there's all sorts of other cities that are also driving around the continent. And the bigger cities eat the smaller cities and make them a part of the bigger city. I'm not sure what's happening in this movie.
Steve, there it is. It's like Mad Max, but it's different.
It's got Hugo Weaving, so you've got that going for you.
Oh, the Red Skull himself.
Uh-huh. Looking at this trailer, I don't know what this movie's about. I don't know that this trailer sells this movie to me.
It doesn't, because there's a story about somebody's mother passing away, mm-hmm. and then
stuff happens. Lots of big, scary green screen stuff happens. I don't know who this movie appeals to.
Good luck.
So if you want a smaller story about more humanity...
How about a grumpy?
There's a grumpy old man story. Directed and starring Clint Eastwood. This one is called The Mule.
Steve, the mule is usually a term used for drug trade.
That's what this is.
Oh, my goodness. This looks, if I was going to go to a movie this week, this uh-huh. Looks like an excellent film.
And again, the trailer for this one makes sense compared to the Mortal Engines trailer. I know what this story is about. This is a good commercial for this.
All right, so we have Clint Eastwood's character. Mm-hmm. Basically,
a 90-year-old horticulturist.
That's right. He opens up a duffel bag. There's certainly a bunch of illegal substances
uh-huh.
in there. There's a police officer comes up.
And a drug-sniffing dog who gets interested in this whole transaction. This is a heartbreaking tale of humanity, about growing old, about feeling like you don't count and that you've made the wrong decisions for yourself and your family.
I don't know if that's what I got from him. I got from it, he's a mule. He's actually transporting this cocaine uh-huh. and he doesn't have a relationship with his family, but I don't know where it fits in.
And he feels badly about that.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
You know how
there's a lot of emotion in this
when
trailer.
I feel bad about something, I usually decide drug running is probably the answer, right?
It might not be.
No, maybe, it's not the answer.
Maybe putting wheels on your city and driving around the continent might be the answer.
Steve, if I had a young person in my family that loved Spider-Man, is uh-huh. there something for them this weekend?
Yes, there is. The Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is opening this weekend. This is the highest rated Spider-Man movie ever on Rotten Tomatoes. It was sitting at 100% for weeks and weeks. It's now dipped to 99%. 81 different critics have said this is a great movie.
All right, so this is a cartoon.
It's animated, yes.
And this is also based on Bendis's, he was a writer, uh-huh. his younger version of Spider-Man, Miles Morales.
Right.
So the Ultimate Spider-Man.
So the Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, meets Peter Parker in this multi-universe tale with all of these different Spider-Manses from all these different areas of the world.
Exactly. Not from the world, from their version of reality.
Okay, fine.
And the of course, the comic relief is, of course, Peter Porker, Steve.
That's Spider-Ham, yes, sir. He is right there in the midst of all this, along with Spider-Gwen. We've got all sorts of different stories that can be told here.
The joke being, is this a universe that the animals speak? Of course, the pig asked that.
This is a very fun trailer. I really look forward to this one. You know, I love Spider-Man.
Everyone loves Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is one of the biggest money makers in the Marvel Universe, and I look forward to this movie. There's another movie called Capernaum that's coming out. This is another one of those... Boy, life is hard in parts of the world, and if you're a kid in those parts of the world, life is really difficult.
So, Steve, is this a Sony Classics picture?
This is a Sony Classics, yes.
Steve, this is a reading picture, too.
Award-winning reading movie.
And, of course, they're speaking Spanish.
I don't think this one is Spanish.
They're speaking some kind of form of Spanish.
Some sort of... One of the Spanishes, French Spanish or German Spanish or something.
It obviously was filmed maybe in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Or, you know, who knows where it was filmed.
Right.
But this is a story that we're having a hard time figuring out what the story is. But it's about children, Steve.
And they are on a journey of some sort, and they're trying to solve a problem of some sort.
But we don't know what it is, but the critics seem to love it because over and over and over throughout the film, it's like, and Steve said, this is the greatest film of all time.
Yeah, it probably is. I think of movies like Lion or the Slumdog Millionaire, where we have these kids in these situations and they find a way to get what they need. This seems like one of those films.
Well, there you go.
Opening this week is a very interesting re-release of a movie from this year. This is something that doesn't get done very often, especially when it's remixed. This is called Once Upon a Deadpool, and it is the PG-13 version of Deadpool 2 that was released this year.
All right, so Deadpool was released back in maybe February?
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the Marvel characters. Ryan Reynolds is starring in this.
Deadpool would never have gotten off the ground without Ryan Reynolds. Let's just put that out there first. Deadpool is Ryan Reynolds.
It was a totally rated R film.
Absolutely.
And that's just because of some of the situations and humor that's going into. Now, Disney... bought Marvel.
Mm-hmm. And they're in the middle of buying Fox.
Well, they're in the middle of buying Fox, but they bought Marvel because they wanted to take their characters and they wanted to kind of plug into the 8-year-old, maybe to the 15-year-old genre.
Mm-hmm.
Rated R films based on the Marvel characters seems to be outside of that group. So this is, I think this is a test by Disney/Fox.
Mm-hmm.
To see if they can take this character.
Deadpool was a test to begin with because that rated R comic book character movie, a lot of people were really skeptical about that before the first Deadpool came out. But that was such a good movie with such good characters, and the dialogue is inappropriate, but it works so well that it's hard for me to say that they did that wrong. But at the same time, I haven't seen Deadpool 2 because my friend that I go to the movies with more often than anybody else is my 12-year-old son, and I don't feel that Deadpool is appropriate for him.
Well, the rated R version isn't, but I can tell you that this looks like a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
And Steve, maybe they can change the diaper.
There's so many things. There's so many gross things in this movie.
The trailer with the...
the father changing the diaper on the baby, and the baby's got the Deadpool's head, is like, ugh. It's like, ugh. I look forward to this. I am going to see Deadpool 2 because this exists. This is great marketing.
This looks like a lot of fun. Steve, but you know, Netflix, the elves over at Netflix have given us another cherished fun thing that you can definitely watch if you subscribe to Netflix. What is that?
We talked about The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina for Halloween. This came out a week before Halloween, and mm-hmm. we loved this show.
This was excellent.
So well put together. The characters are wonderful. The images are beautiful, and the story works so well. They were smart enough to record a Chilling Adventures of Sabrina holiday special that is going to drop on Netflix on Friday. It's called A Midwinter's Tale.
Well, there you go. So the gentleman who put together the Sabrina comic book,
mm-hmm.
the reimagined version of it, basically took this, I don't know, 50s or 60s character and brought it up to that we have the feeling of the 50s and 60s with sort of a modern subversive kind of Stranger Things type of play with it.
It definitely has that look and feel of the 50s, but it's got the 2018 sensibilities where all the people are acting slightly differently than they would have in the 1950s. There's differences between this and the 1950s.
So there's something very playful for this. Uh-huh. And this is definitely going for that, when I say teenager, you know, the 16-year-old, uh-huh, the 25-year-old, or whatever it is. This is very skilled. I recommend this. This is a lot of fun.
Very similar to the CW show Riverdale that is built for that 15 to 18-year-old market. But this is...
My kids watch that.
But this is definitely darker than that.
Yes, it is.
Definitely...
This is horror.
Horror-level Christmas episode. I look forward to this one a lot. You found a documentary that's coming out for our friends at Fathom Events are going to bring us. It's called They Shall Not Grow Old. This is fascinating.
All right, so this is released only on Monday, December 17th,
mm-hmm,
and also on December 27th, there's, uh-huh, going to be a second showing. So this is Fathom Events. I do know from where we're recording there are three...
local theaters
that are going to be going to show this.
Yeah.
So there's going to be the showing. So you have to go to Fathom Events and get your ticket if you want to see this. Peter Jackson basically took World War I footage,
mm-hmm,
colorized it. Uh-huh. This is black and white. It's usually where we find the film.
Sure.
And then threw all the sound and basically made everything look like it's a modern film.
And it is stunning. If you click on this trailer, you will see the difference between watching old black and white 100-year-old movie and this colorized sound-added thing. It adds an emotional level that is stunning to me.
I immediately think of Dead Poets Society and Robin Williams bending over the boys who are looking at the trophies and the pictures of those boys in the... behind the cabinet,
mm-hmm,
and all those pictures. These are all young men, but they're from the past.
Yeah.
And what young people many times forget is that their grandparents were their age at some point,
right,
too. And we're all worm food, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And by taking this old black and white footage and presenting it in a way that makes it look fresh, and you look at these kids, mm-hmm, and they are young people.
They're 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds. It's amazing.
These were fighting in World War I.
Uh-huh.
And what we're seeing is all of a sudden they are you.
They're human.
You can see them as you see yourself. And what I immediately noticed, and I pointed out to you, is that Steve, dental skills
hygiene, yeah,
has changed tremendously. The number of people,
uh-huh,
who have teeth that could have been, you know, our era is going to be defined by the dentist, because, yep, you can look at all these Americans and they're perfect white teeth. And you go, holy cow, how did that happen?
100 years has changed a lot of things, and dentistry is one of those things you can see in this video. This is stunning to see and to feel that change between when we see black and white old footage and this new footage. It feels like they hired actors to play these parts, but they didn't.
Well, they did have voice actors who, mm-hmm, you know, when someone says something. And there's the modern sound, so when the engines are rumbling,
mm-hmm,
and also you can hear like the there was a gentleman who's like tapping a big stick on somebody's helmet,
yeah,
and kind of teasing him a little bit.
Yeah, the Foley work is wonderful on this.
So
this is beautiful. Go find a way to go see this.
This is highly recommended.
Yeah.
So good
don't,
stuff.
Don't miss this one. It's only Fathom Events, only in your local theater, only on December 17th, and again on December 27th. Go find that. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. You know, there are a few things that we talk about on this show all the time. Mystery Science Theater, Doctor Who, and American Gods. I think we've talked about American Gods by Neil Gaiman more than we've talked about any other book in 5 years on this show.
What's so amazing about it is, like, every time I turn around, there's another interpretation of the Neil Gaiman book.
And
so there was the Neil Gaiman, the original novel.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, the 10th anniversary novel, which is kind of an expanded novel. So I read that. And then I did the audio version of it. It was like a full cast presentation. So I got to experience it a second time. And then shortly after that, They have the American Gods Stars series.
Right.
And that was, the first season was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you saw this week, they've actually announced the second season's going to be coming out in March.
Nice.
Now, the directors of this, the producers, have left the series. The first series on the Stars was very expensive. They put a lot of money, and then they had a lot of actors, you know, leave, and Gillian Anderson has left in her character. Kristen Chenoweth left her character. Neil Gaiman, at that point, jumped in. He was the author of American Gods, jumped in and is actually working with them. The second season comes out in March.
There
see,
you go.
See, Steve.
And you have high expectations for that, based on what you saw in the first one.
First season is excellent.
Okay.
The second season, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Today we're talking about some graphic novel adaptations of this work. The first one's called American Gods, My Shadows. Tell us about that one.
All right. So basically, it came out as a comic.
Okay.
So Pete Craig Russell is our gentleman who is sort of our leader of this. He's a writer and artist. He took Neil Gaiman's book, and he's adapted it into basically three series. So there'll be three parts. There was 9 issues to each one. And so the first one we got was American Gods, My Shadows. The second one is American Gods, My Ansel, which is the last part of the second 9 issues. Comes out in December. So it'll be coming out in a week or so.
Okay.
But and then they'll, you know, at some point pick up and do a third part. P. Craig Russell is also an artist. He's worked with Scott Hampton, which is another gifted artist, which gives us this beautiful kind of painted look to it. It's a it truly is beautiful line work. So this is a very clear story and a very gifted writer. P. Craig Russell is known usually for he's tapped a lot of the classic works, Shakespeare, Oscar Wilde. The stuff he usually creates his interpretations is meant to sit on the shelf for a long time. It's sort of timeless stuff. He also has a relationship with Neil Gaiman. He's the one who did the graphic novel adaptation of Coraline, which is basically, you know, many of our young people may have read that.
Or seen the movie. There's an interesting animated film of Coraline. Neil Gaiman is a pretty prolific writer, and American Gods is one of those stories that you keep going back to.
Yeah, I've dipped into this multiple times. Shadow is our character that we follow, and he's sort of kind of our way into the world. The idea is that the old gods, as people stopped worshiping them, eventually made their way to the United States. So what I found in the past is that I learned a lot about the world mythology. So, you know, you want to know about African mythology? The Anansi Boys was a good way of being introduced to that. Mr. Wednesday is our character that is sort of our, whose shadow is working for. Mr. Wednesday, I don't know if they ever come out and say he's Odin, but he is Odin.
Okay.
So Wednesday, Odin.
Got it.
And we run into Egyptian gods. We run into Thor and Loki and all sorts of people that we know. Now, for our people who are in our area, the Chicago area, this is very important because they get on the road and they travel quite a bit. And they end up traveling... well, I think the part where we're getting ready to hit with the second season is House on the Rock, which if you've ever been up to Wisconsin, you've only seen a few ads for House on the Rock. Just a couple of them, Steve. Well, we are running into that now. Shadow at the end of the part where I am in the second series of books is up in Wisconsin at an old town, and something spooky is happening up there. People are missing. Young people are missing. And the pond is frozen, and Shadow's just kind of this ho-hum kind of guy who gets thrown into all these supernatural type of positions.
And in the story, then they introduce some new gods, some of the gods that maybe we don't think of as gods here in America, but we are certainly stuck to our technology, for instance.
Well, that's part of what we're seeing the struggle is. Mm-hmm. So the O gods are being forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so their powers are kind of diminishing. There's still work within, you know, their powers. But technology seems to be the ones that is going to do the battle. There's eventually going to be the confrontation. And I absolutely have enjoyed this. Since I've been through so many versions of this, I can say every single one of the versions has been top-notch.
Huh.
So reading the novel, absolutely wonderful experience. The audiobook, where you have the full cast, once again, I learned more because I went through it a second time, but you have a full cast there to kind of interpret it for you.
Mm-hmm.
The television series through Starz, the first season, certainly on an adult level. I mean, this is definitely rated R type of stuff, even though it's not rated. Television mature. But the comic is, I would say, an older teen would be okay to read this. Because we're dealing with a lot of the same issues. And not that there's an issue here and there, but there's all the good stuff. There's all the good things there. P. Craig Russell, his line work is incredible. Scott Hampton's line work is incredible. They have some filling artists, too, to help out. The coloring is good. The story pacing is beautiful. It's not just telling the story. He's interpreting Gaiman's work.
Wow.
So he's doing, and if he has a problem with not understanding something, he calls Neil Gaiman. He started working on this maybe around the time that they were working on the television series, and he basically said, I should call it a streaming series. He purposely did not watch it because there's some differences in it, but it's not anything that's throwing you off. You know who all these characters are. I highly recommend it. If you have, you can go to Comixology and you can download these. There's a go on sale quite often. Or you can buy them through Amazon.
Right.
And you can buy them as single issues, or you can buy them as compilations. Usually where you get the price break is compilations. So the first part, you know, it goes on sale for, you know, about $8. And it's 9 issues. Perfectly reasonable as far as pricing. And the second series, if you want to wait for the book, comes out maybe in 2019 at some point for all of them. But if not, you can buy the issues, I think, a couple bucks each.
Yeah. This is a story that, again, has really taken your imagination. The analysis of all of these mythologies from around the world, if you have any interest in any of that, this is a great gateway into the conversation of those mythologies. It's called American Gods. These specific books are American Gods, My Shadows, and American Gods, My Ansel. They are graphic novels. You can find them on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Grow with it.
You know, Christmas is coming, and the Doctor Who...
They giveth, Steve. They giveth.
And they taketh away. Don't forget, there is no Doctor Who episode this week or next week. That's 2 weeks without a new, fresh Doctor Who episode. But there is a new episode on New Year's Day, or as the BBC is calling it, Who Year's Day. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But we also have something to look forward to in March. There's yet another lost episode of Doctor Who that is going to be released in March 2019. It is an animated treatment of the Mokra Terror, one of those lost episodes that was deleted because they couldn't hold on to the film canisters. They needed the space, so they threw it away.
So for our listeners who don't understand, Doctor Who was recorded basically on a tape. It was many times it was erased afterwards. What I guess people who have interest in Doctor Who have been able to do is all over the world, somebody has a copy or maybe half a copy or whatever.
Or they set a tape recorder in front of the TV and recorded the sound or whatever to get that material back together.
And so these are called lost episodes. And what they've been able to do is animate them.
Mm-hmm. And the animation is not great. It's not great animation. It is good enough animation to get this story back in front of our eyeballs. So I look forward to seeing what they do with the Mokra Terror in March. that's going to be awesome.
All right, so Steve, we have American Gods in March. We have Doctor Who coming in March. But in April, there seems to be something special going on here in Chicago. What's going on?
Don't forget, the annual Star Wars Celebration is happening this year in Chicago in April. And it's going to be really exciting. There's going to be so many people flocking to the city of Chicago. We're going to see all the stars of Star Wars. We're going to talk to so many people, including the authors who have written Star Wars books in the last 40 years.
So they announced the authors. Who are they?
Well, I am excited to say we're going to talk to Timothy Zahn, Claudia Gray, and Delilah Dawson at Star Wars Celebration. I look forward to hearing from these three people because I enjoy the work that they've put into their books in the last 40 years.
If they strike me down, Steve, I shall become even stronger.
That's right, from a certain point of view. Claudia Gray, especially, if you haven't been reading the Claudia Gray novels of Star Wars in the last 5 years, I really suggest that you do. She is a young adult author, and these books are young adult books, but that does not mean that they are not accessible to adults. These stories are fantastic. The characters really, really sound like the characters that we know and love from the Star Wars universe. The latest one was Leia, Princess of Alderaan. Fantastic adventure. Great story about a young lady finding her place in the world. I look forward to talking to these guys at Star Wars Celebration.
So, Steve, if you found a penny, you'd pick it up.
That's right.
But what if you were trying to look at the food pyramid and you wanted to eat something? What would you use a penny for?
I would go to McDonald's and order a Whopper.
For a penny?
Yeah.
How would you do that?
This is a great promotion. This has been my whole week. I've been talking about this on Facebook. I've been telling all of my students about this. Burger King has a wonderful marketing gimmick this week. If you get the Burger King app...
And who wouldn't have that?
Nobody has that. That's why they're doing this marketing gimmick. You get the Burger King app. You go to your local McDonald's. Yes, that McDonald's. And you order your Whopper sandwich at the McDonald's on the app. It will be one penny.
All right, so the beauty of this is you have to be within 600 feet of a McDonald's to order your Whopper.
Which is pretty easy here in this part of the world.
Well, for Steve, on his way home,
yeah,
he drives by a McDonald's.
With a Burger King across the street.
With a Burger King, you know, roughly across the street. Yes. So it kind of works out real well for Steve.
It worked out fantastically. I found such joy going to McDonald's and ordering a Whopper and then going to Burger King to collect my prize. It was wonderful.
So it cost you a penny.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the debit card that's connected to give you that penny.
Yes.
Holy shnikes.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go.
This is great marketing. They're calling this the Whopper Detour. They have all sorts of marketing materials where the word detour is spelled with an E, but the E is kind of a two arches of an M on its side. This is brilliant marketing on Burger King's part.
Well, there you go. The flame-broiled burgers of Burger King are yours, Steve.
Broiling beats frying.
And you can have it your way.
That's right. Of course, I'm thinking of Mac and Me, which was in the MST3K gauntlet this week as well. And yes, there's of course several Burger King references in that McDonald's-based movie.
All right, so if you're following us on Facebook and Twitter, Steve, you of course have been doing the countdown to Christmas.
Yeah.
And all the fancy songs that we've found.
Yeah.
It is my way, or our way of saying that if you were listening, if you were the person, the program director of a radio station, you would not have to play music that's 50, 60, 70 years old.
Uh-huh.
And while it certainly is acceptable on some level, you can actually have modern music.
Yeah.
There's enough modern releases that you could have put together a playlist that doesn't have to be like, well, this, you know, this Elvis song from forever ago.
So that's exactly what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. One of the real challenges I have with listening to the radio, our WLIT, Steve, is our local radio station playing Christmas music, which I flip on once in a while, is they really are stuck on the same 15 songs,
yeah.
20 songs.
That is the problem that I have with Christmas radio as well.
Of course, if you just play your music, you don't get Delilah, which I love Delilah.
I know you do.
Yeah, you're feeling kind of nostalgic, Steve, and you're going to get together with your family. And what are the things that you like to do? What are the traditions you like doing, Steve? And then my new favorite's the French guy at night.
After Delilah. There's a radio show after Delilah that's a French guy.
Yes, he wants to give you advice on your relationships, yeah. Steve. And and then he's going to answer those after these couple Christmas songs.
Radio is certainly a dying art. It's something that I've always admired. I always wanted to be on the radio. That's why I have a podcast. But I don't really listen to the radio the same way as I used to.
Steve, it's time to light a candle and put together the cookies
mm-hmm.
and get some eggnog and enjoy yourselves.
And what I think I'm going to do is put together, I'm going to take your list of songs from our Twitter and Facebook feed and make a Spotify playlist. And I'll put that in the show notes because I have Spotify as of this week because the kids begged for it for so long. I finally succumbed to their wiles and we have access to Spotify. I'm going to do that. I can make that happen.
And maybe we can talk about that next week because mm-hmm. you have Spotify
mm-hmm.
and I have Apple Music.
So
we both are basically paying for streaming music services,
mm-hmm.
Which is for we have young people in our family,
right?
And they like music,
mm-hmm.
and if we did not have this, we'd be buying a new recording or two a month,
right?
So this seems to be more economical, but still, it's very expensive. It's $180 a year, uh-huh. a year for a family.
So let's do this. Let's put that for next week. Mm-hmm. And you listeners, if you have something to say about what you do, how do you listen to music? Give us an email. Give us a voicemail. We'll talk about music next week as a part of our week before Christmas show. This is something that we need to look at.
And in the evening, listen to Delilah and listen to that French guy.
The French guy. The nameless, faceless French guy.
Is it
Paul Prudhomme?
I have no idea.
I don't think so. The other thing that I need you to do, listeners, is I need you to make your list. We are going to make our list of our favorites of 2018, and we're going to talk about that in 2 weeks in our last episode of 2018, which happens to be on December 25th. And we are going to make our list of our favorite movies, favorite books, and favorite news stories of 2018. We want to hear your voice as well. Tell us what your favorites were. Give us a voicemail. Send us an email. Make your list. Check it twice. Let's get ready for the end of 2018. I think that's enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. We got a plan for next week. How about that?
We have a plan.
That's different.
We're like the Cylons.
We're like the Cylons. That's right. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and Spotify. We're on Spotify, too, so go search us up on Spotify as well. Want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future. I just wanna-